This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
All right, should we start with the Carolina Hurricanes? Because you can't go 82-0 without first going 9-0, Alec.
Those are facts.
I mean, we had a couple of firsts last night in the 4-3 win over the Chicago Blackhawks. We had the first ever, I'm saying first of many, Seth Jarvis goal. That was very good. Actually, that line was very good. Jarvis had a goal. His line mate, Derek Stepan, he also had a goal. Rod Brind'Amour, after the game, was asked by our friend Corey Lavallette, North State Journal, about the fact that the fourth line was productive. And Corey was right.
No, I get a little harsh. We weren't bad. We just weren't good. You know, we were just kind of going along with it, but they were good. So that line was solid, and you know, great to see Jarvie get that one. Got kind of lucky that it went in, but a hell of a job to, you know, take off and you know, get some separation on his D-man. And really happy for the kid.
I made a play in the defensive zone, got it past Gustafson, went right by him, drew a penalty if he didn't end up scoring. Ends up scoring. I don't think it was Marc-Andre Fleury's best game by any stretch of the imagination. Oh. So that was one of the first. The other first was first time all year the Hurricanes trailed by two goals in a given game. They were down 3-1 until the Jarvis goal with, I think, 12:50 or at 12:50 of the third period, of the second period. And it was their first third period comeback. First time all year the Hurricanes trailed, right, in the third period?
Yes, going into the third period. They were trailing after two. It's the first time.
Have they ever trailed in the third? I don't think they've trailed in the third.
They have trailed. No, I don't think they've trailed in the third. They have trailed after one.
Yes.
Canes were 4-0. Actually, now they're 5-0.
5-0.
After when trailing after one period.
I mean, They keep giving up the first goal. They've given up the first goal for the last five games. So all of those firsts were there. And now this is going to sound weird regarding a team that not only hasn't lost a game yet, but one that hasn't even needed extra time yet. When was the last time the Hurricanes played a really good game?
I think they played their most complete game of the year, maybe against Boston, last Thursday night.
The way I looked at the Boston game was the two goals that they scored before the empty net were kind of lucky.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't play badly in that game. They haven't played badly really in any game.
Yeah.
Right. I think their best game was Toronto.
Yeah, could have been Toronto. That was earlier that week.
That was Monday.
On Monday night.
So this game was Wednesday. They've played four games since that game. They won them all. I don't think they've played great. They haven't played to their capabilities, for sure. So, like, we can say that's a good sign, or we can say that's going to catch up to them. And if it catches up to them on Saturday in Florida, could get messy. Could get really messy in Florida on Saturday. Florida's legit. I mean, they're a Stanley Cup contending legit team, as are the Hurricanes, by the way. Nobody's saying the Hurricanes are not. And by the way, more than likely it will be without Brett Pesce. So Pesce got hurt last night, and I don't think anybody believes it's a long-term thing, but it's probably a couple of games. And we don't even know the extent. Like, if I was just going to guess, at first blush, I thought maybe it was left arm. And then I thought, maybe it's his head, but he stayed on the bench, actually stayed in the game in the second period, but he didn't play at all in the third. Then I thought, well, maybe it's upper body, kind of back. Maybe there's, you know, you just kind of, I mean, you could be a fractured rib or something like that in his back or something like that. I don't know, but he hit the wall pretty hard. So hopefully he'll be okay either way. The Hurricanes are 9-0. All right, let's get to some of this NFL stuff. I want to start with Aaron Rodgers. And I'm going to start with this comment. You tell me if I'm wrong, Alec. Aaron Rodgers is a liar. Is that fair?
I think it's fair.
Yeah, that's the problem here.
I mean, I think you can sugarcoat it however you want to sugarcoat it. You can say he was being deceitful. That's like a liar. That sounds like a synonym. Yeah. I used lying by omission.
Not telling the whole truth.
Right.
Lying.
Still lying.
Everybody, put yourself in the position of a parent. When your children do not tell you everything, they are lying. So here's the story. And I'll start it this way. If Rodgers had just come out and said, when he got to training camp in whenever it was, August, right? If he had just come out and said, I've decided to not get vaccinated. If he had said that, you know, like Lamar Jackson. Remember? Lamar Jackson, not vaccinated. We'd have given him a hard time. We'd have talked about the vulnerabilities. We would have wondered why. And then we would have simply gone about our business knowing that at any moment, COVID could grab him, whether he got sick, tested positive, or somebody around him did, which left him vulnerable to protocol. Remember, we talked about this with Cam Newton, right? It's why New England cut him. But ultimately, we would have just moved on. At least he would have been out in the open about it. But Rodgers did I've been immunized, then talked about the guys who weren't vaccinated and how he wasn't going to judge them, and he talked about it from a perspective of somebody who was vaccinated, even though he was immunized. But here's the thing. He knew he wasn't immunized. He knew the NFL had already turned down his ridiculous appeal of, I've had my antibodies built up. There's no documentation that works. Not to mention the NFL has their own protocols, and in every case, in order to be considered a vaccinated individual, a vaccine's got to be part of it. Sometimes it's just one dose. The other part of this story is that the definition of immunization involves a vaccine. I mean, we can't make it up, Aaron. So he's been walking around his whole time, and I don't even care. Like, there's some protocols that he's probably breached. Indoor behavior. He's not wearing a mask for the press conferences, things like that. You know, I don't even care about that stuff. To me, this is a bad teammate. This is a selfish teammate. Because he played one role publicly and was really doing a different thing privately. So I got no time for that. I'm divorcing myself from Aaron Rodgers, Alec.
Uh-oh.
I divorced myself from the Jets.
Are you auctioning your fandom?
Yes. Yes. I have to decide who. I actually reached out to a friend of mine in Baltimore to see, hey, did Lamar get vaccinated this year? Because if the answer was yes, I might be on the Lamar Jackson bandwagon. But nope. I don't know. I'm up for grabs. My NFL allegiance is up for grabs.
I don't know. I'm trying to give you some options, some players that maybe you might be interested in taking on.
I will ask this question in a little bit.
Favorite quarterback.
Yeah, I will ask. It doesn't have to be a quarterback. It could be any position. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I kind of dig Michael Carter of the Jets, but I don't want to go back. Man, I was in that relationship for a long time. This would be like Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. They went back, and it's not the same.
Yeah, and also
can't do it.
You just don't know how long you know, that relationship can last with it being a running back. Like, I think you were really safe with basically a future Hall of Fame quarterback who plays for an iconic franchise, who's really, really good, and was an MVP last year. Like, you had the longevity of that relationship.
Yeah, but he broke my trust. And lied to me. I can't unhear the lie.
You also could defend him in
I won't do it.
You know, in the face of scrutiny, like he was taken all offseason from people who were ready to just discard.
I defended him. He ruined that trust. That bond is gone.
Mm. I wonder if he. I hope he hears this, and he knows how low you have sunk because of this.
So disappointed. I'm disappointed in Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
All right, well,
and it's more about the deceit than anything else.
Like I said, I mean, I would have thought he was a dope,
right?
For not getting a vaccine, but at least he didn't lie to me,
right?
Because that's what he did. He lied, flat lied.
Mm-hmm.
All right, more things. We will. I will have to come up with a new allegiance later on.
Josh
program.
Allen.
It's on the board. I don't know. I just don't know if I can root for anything Buffalo. I got a serious. That's a problem.
See, I think Buffalo is a fun team to root for from afar. Like, I don't want to go to Buffalo. You got no real interest. Yeah. And going.
Friend of mine calls Buffalo Buffetucky, and I just can't unhear that.
But, like, stuff about Buffalo that I feel like I like.
I've never been to Buffalo, actually.
I mean, I know
I've been to Niagara Falls.
So, yeah, I've been to Niagara Falls. Never been to Buffalo.
I've never been to Buffalo. Niagara Falls is beautiful. I was on the Maid of the Mist.
So was I.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is.
You give me the poncho.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll never forget that trip for many reasons. first of all, we checked out of our first hotel on the American side and ended up staying on the Canadian side.
On purpose? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, that's good. We hate to be just an error.
Yeah, my mom's hotel room, sir. She's
oh, really?
Yeah, very OCD with hotel rooms. So we had to go somewhere else. I also got sick and fainted on that trip at one point.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was probably 9.
Oh, okay.
10, something
all
like
right.
that.
Really? Yeah. Faint? That's,
told my mom.
It's an early age to faint.
Told my mom I didn't feel well.
Right. Well, you
she
were right.
She laughed in my face.
Wow.
And
your
she
dad's
was,
a doctor, right?
Yeah. She was,
okay.
She was
just wanted to make sure.
She was tying my shoe, and I had timber.
Wow.
Yeah. I also ate in a humongous plate of pasta primavera for the first time. The chef came out and was like, no one finishes that. You
really?
Just finished that. Yeah.
Pasta primavera at age 9? Pasta
yeah.
primavera?
Yes.
Okay. That's fine.
Those are my Maid of the Mist, switching hotels, fainting, and pasta primavera are my memories from Niagara Falls.
It's the four horsemen of the apocalypse right there. all right, so we have that in common. Very good. Can we talk about Odell Beckham Sr.?
Sure.
See, not Odell Beckham Jr., Odell Beckham Sr. He posted a video on Instagram yesterday. I am not going to even pretend that I saw the video. I don't care what the video says. I am going to go on the basis that the video says everything that everybody wants it to say. Because it's entirely open to interpretation. I think there is clearly a problem here because we have Odell Beckham Sr. putting out a video showing Odell Beckham Jr. being frozen out by Baker Mayfield. Dad is mad because his son is no longer the productive player he was a few years ago. Son is mad because of the same thing. Dad is clearly blaming Baker Mayfield. Dad is also being a 10-year-old about it. I got no time for that. But let's deal with the two main topics here. Well, first, let's hear Baker Mayfield on this entire issue. And Baker is going to sound polished and right because Baker is really good at presenting himself to the media. There's just no question. Here's Baker.
Hurt? No. Surprised? Yes. Yeah, I think there's different things that play a factor into it. I've had conversations with his dad before, man to man, face to face. I was pretty surprised by the video and, you know, the intentions and the feelings behind it. I'd be lying if I said otherwise, but hurt? No, I'm good. I'll be all right.
I don't know what Baker's supposed to say to that. Anyway, here are the two main issues as I see it. Is Baker Mayfield purposely freezing out OBJ? Because according to everything I have read about the video, you could absolutely say, yeah, there's a wide open OBJ and Baker doesn't throw it to him. And he's sort of in the frame, the frame of reference right in front, like, man, he's wide open. I have the football. I haven't thrown it yet. Why don't I throw it to him? Because he's wide open. I have no idea what's going on in the play. All right. But clearly, according to everything I've read, there are several instances of that being the case. But if that's the case, why? Why would Baker Mayfield, who understands that his longevity in this game is based on his team being successful, why would he jeopardize that to not throw to a wide open wide receiver? Why would he do that? So that doesn't, logically, that doesn't make sense. Okay? But here's the other part of this. It is possible that Baker Mayfield just isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part of this equation that I think bears more exploration. It's possible Baker, because when you play in college and you are really successful in college, it's very possible that you don't ever have to read a defense. You are told, this guy's open. All the quarterbacks that came out of Baylor when Art Briles was allowing all those sexual assaults to happen, right? All those quarterbacks that came out of Baylor never had to call a play, never had to read a defense. All they had to do was throw to the guy they were told to throw to, because somebody was always open. That's the truth. Bryce Petty, who was drafted by the Jets in like the fifth round, like never called a play. That guy can't be a quarterback in the NFL. They never had to call a play. It's hard. You have to be exceptional to be able to play in the National Football League if you are not trained as a quarterback as opposed to trained as a thrower of the football. Those are two different things.
Oh, I 100% think that that's a part of it. You know what else I think is a part of it? I think Odell Beckham Jr. ain't that good anymore.
Well, that's also part of it. Maybe he's not running the right routes. Maybe he's just not as good, because skills do deteriorate. He's had
so many injuries.
Injuries, right.
He's been in and out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he's been lighting it up the last bunch of years. He's played two seasons where he's played all 16 games in a season.
And it is also possible, we'll have to close on this, Trip Tracy is going to join us. It is also very possible that because these two guys have not been on the field together enough, that the one thing that quarterback and wide receiver have to have, the ability to read each other, is not there. So Beckham isn't in the place that Mayfield thinks he's going to be, and OBJ isn't where, like, he thinks that I'm supposed to be here, but Baker's thinking something else. So that communication is clearly not there. But either way, OBJ ain't going to play for the Cleveland Browns anymore. Darren Gant, Panthers.com. He joins us on the Adam Gold Show. Christian McCaffrey was on a practice field yesterday. Sam Darnold has been walking around today. Has Sam Darnold done anything significant that we may think leads to playing on Sunday against the Patriots?
Well, you'll have to tune into Panthers.com for the injury report later this afternoon, won't you, find out the level of participation Sam did have today.
I guess I will. It's a good sign if he's back on a practice field already, isn't it?
Well, it's at least not a bad sign. And part of where this week's kind of a funny one in terms of injury reporting is because he's in the concussion protocol, it's kind of hard to, I mean, until he's clear, it doesn't matter. I mean,
right.
He could be limited, he could be full, whatever. But until he's cleared by an independent neurologist, it won't matter what he's doing because he wouldn't be out there. So, you know, we'll see. It's at least not a bad sign.
Right.
You know, they've had some guys in the last couple of weeks who've had concussions who haven't even been on the property. So, you know, yeah, I mean, the fact that Sam's out and moving around probably suggests that there's at least some degree of participation.
Darren Gant, Panthers.com, joining us. I love his column, Ask the Old Guy. So let me ask the old guy about Christian McCaffrey, who is borderline old guy, because once you've been in the league 4 years, you're kind of an old guy at the running back position. How confident are you that he's going to get on the field on Sunday?
We'll see. I mean, as you know, and again, you'll have to stay tuned to Panthers.com for all the latest on your injury information, Adam. No, here's what I will say about Christian. Christian is as serious about his rehab and recovery as any player I've ever been around. He is meticulous in his detail. It takes him 25 minutes to stretch. Christian seems to be in an all right mood for a guy who's been out for a good long while, whether that means – and again, I keep going back to the way they've handled some of these other ones. Stephon Gilmore probably – could have played the week before in New York, but they gave him a little time. So we'll see. I mean, I think a lot of it with him, they're going to trust Christian and see how he feels. I mean, this whole thing is going to be, you know, he does a little bit today or a little bit yesterday, a little bit more today, a little bit more as the week goes on. And then you see how he is at the end of the week. I think there's at least a shot. I will tell you that the thing I believe for sure is that last week's game proved to them beyond a shadow of a doubt that one running back is not enough. Mm-hmm. And that if Christian comes back, it's not going to be that same Batan like, you know, workload that he's going to be out there touching it 29, 30 times a game. I think seeing Chuba Hubbard do it, seeing Ameer Abdullah come in off the bench and play a little part, you know, gives them some confidence that, hey, using more than one of these guys is a good idea.
I have never believed, or I shouldn't say never, I don't believe that Christian McCaffrey falls into the category of injury prone. But a lot of people, yeah, based on, you know, the last 2 years, people are already starting to use that. How do you react to somebody saying, well, he's obviously injury prone?
That's fine if it's always the same thing. If you look back at last year, it was ankle, it was quad, it was shoulder. I mean, none of the things related. This is hamstring. So I think it's kind of, you know, one thing, and you've probably heard me say this because I say it a lot, is the one factor that nobody puts enough credence in as it pertains to professional football is dumb luck.
Yeah.
And some guys are just unfortunate sometimes. I mean, it's like, you know, Dan Morgan was quote unquote injury prone. Was it his fault? The grass flew out from his feet at Bank of America Stadium and, you know, he broke his ankle his rookie year. No, not necessarily. So, yeah, I don't know that I'm ready to put that on Christian right now, but I do think it's fair to say you've got to monitor the way he works. You've got to keep an eye on, you know, the workload and things like that, because I do think, I mean, again, look at, other situations around the league. I mean, the Tennessee Titans are kind of up the creek right now because Derrick Henry's out for probably the rest of the season. So I think that as much as the guy himself makes coaches want to mitigate risk and broaden the scope. I mean, if somebody's the best player on the field, you put the ball in his hands, and that's going to be the case when Christian gets back. But I do think that it is smart to broaden it out a little bit and use as many guys as you can, and it helps. I mean, if Christian McCaffrey's back on the field, I think Robbie Anderson probably benefits from it because, you know, it opens some things up for him that haven't necessarily been there for the last 8 weeks or at least 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see. But that's a long way of saying, I think Christian's moving in the right direction, and they understand that they can't continue to pound him into the ground the way some people think has happened in the past.
Matt Rhule has said a couple of times about basically how much improved and how good he thinks Ian Thomas is. Will they prove it by throwing in the ball a lot?
Are you kidding? I don't. No, okay, sure, I guess. I mean, part of it is you trade Dan Arnold, and who else are you going to throw it to at the position? Tommy Trimble's doing some stuff, and it's almost like a committee tight end. Between them, they've got tight end production out of Ian Thomas and Tommy Trimble. So I don't know. I think that if you look at the players they've got on hand here at the moment, especially Terrace Marshall coming back, this week. He's pretty close to being out of the concussion protocol itself. So I think you start asking yourself, do I give myself a better chance at success throwing it to Ian Thomas or to, Terrace Marshall and Shai Smith? I think probably B would be the answer there. But, that's one of those things. They don't really have that quote-unquote pass-catching tight end, especially since they traded Dan Arnold, and I think they could still use one of those.
Oh, they definitely need a tight – I mean, Cam Newton's best friend when he was running the show in Charlotte was Greg Olsen. It was even the year where they had Jeremy Shockey. They had two of them. They need guys who can operate in the middle of the field like that. Sam Darnold would be a better quarterback with a better tight end. And I think you see all the teams around the
NFL.
Any quarterback.
Practically every quarterback in the NFL.
I mean, like, it's probably not a coincidence, right? Aaron Rodgers has always had a good tight end. Travis Kelce.
And also ivermectin. I'm sorry. What were we talking about?
Look, I'm my emotions are raw, Darren. I've become an Aaron Rodgers fan. I ditched the Jets to become an Aaron Rodgers fan, and he flat lied to me. My heart is broken. I am actively seeking other NFL affection.
Now imagine if you were in the Green Bay locker room, how you'd feel. I think that's the tough part of it.
Do you think they didn't know?
I believe it was known in the building, but I think where it's irresponsible is, if you believe the Packers that they're following the protocols for unvaccinated players in the building, I can tell you they're not in that interview room.
Yeah.
And I've got friends in that room like Jason Wilde and Rob Domofsky and Wes Hockowitz who I care about and want to be well. So I do not prefer to have them in a room with someone who was unvaccinated and eventually contract. So it's hard. And I think there is an element of trust there that seems to be broken. I mean, and the word games is the most offensive part of it, to be honest. If you're sitting there parsing the difference between vaccinated and immunized, I mean, come on, give me a break.
Yeah, I 100% true. By the way, part of the definition of being immunized means you have been vaccinated. Give me the impact to two guys that returned to the team this week on defense. Stephon Gilmore, or didn't return, he showed up for the first time, and Shaq Thompson. I mean, look, I understand that it's just the Atlanta Falcons, but their defense, those two guys played a big part, even though they didn't play a ton, but they were impactful players. Shaq was just amazing.
Sure. And it's pretty immediate how you see that difference in that defense. I mean, Shaq's, he's on one right now. I mean, he's kind of found his home in the middle of this thing now, and they've figured out that they trust him. He trusts them. He's the size they want him to be. He put on about 10 pounds, plays bigger and is still fast. And, it was obvious. I mean, how much of a difference it was. He comes up with the pick early, but even before that, I think with all those young kids on defense, when stuff gets weird, you look around and it's like, all right, who's going to fix this? And for so long it was, Thomas Davis, Luke Kuechly, I mean, or even before that, some of the other guys who played here in the middle in the past. But when Shaq wasn't on the field, nothing against Jermaine Carter, but it's not the same.
Man.
And I think having him back helped settle everything with all those youngsters out there running around. And, it made a huge difference. But, oh, by the way, Stephon Gilmore's back in the back of the defense. I mean, former defensive player of the year is all of a sudden. And if you have a minute, I would encourage you again to check out Panthers.com. I went deep dive on Stephon Gilmore and kind of that interception and how it comes up. And not just the play itself, but he's valuable to them because coaches can say words all day. They can say, backpedal to this point and then turn. But when you see Stephon Gilmore do things absolutely right every day in practice, every day in the meeting room, all coaches got to do is point him and say, go do that.
Yep.
And that's good for Keith Taylor. That's good for Dante Jackson. That's good for J.C. Horn, even though he's not out on the field with him right now. I mean, it's I believe, an entertaining look at a guy who can make a pretty significant difference around here the back half of the season.
Yeah, it's really one of the reasons I thought that this really could be looked at as a long-term acquisition, not just for the season. When everybody talked about they're in win now mode, I'm like, there's different, you know, there's different versions of win now. They're not a Super Bowl contender, but making the playoffs, even if you get bouncing
better,
right? And even if you make the playoffs and lose in the first round, man, I think playoff experience absolutely matters. All right, real quick, Darren Gant, the New England is not going to let the Panthers run the ball 47 times like they did a week. I'm pretty sure that they won't. Can they still get to the running game, but as our old friend Steve Logan used to say, but do it left-handed? Throw to set up the run. Is that the formula for them maybe this week?
Could be, and that's a fair point. Steve's a wise man. You should listen to him. I think that it's worth remembering that the Falcons are not very good against the run. They don't have very much talent on the front of that defense other than Grady Jarrett. And I think, you know, it's good that they did it when they did. It's important to have that kind of success. But again, it's not going to be an every week thing that they're going to be carrying it 47 times a game, obviously. So they're going to have to get back to it. Whether it's Sam, whether it's PJ this week, I think there's going to be a lot more of an effort to run, but also, you know, pass to run and keep things short. I mean, listen, last week was not only designed to run the ball a lot. I mean, let's be honest. It was designed to protect Sam from himself and to keep Sam from having to do all the stuff himself. And it goes back to the way it was earlier this year. I mean, when Sam was taking care of the ball, being careful, making the short safe throws. I mean, that can work for a while. Eventually, a guy's going to have to make a play downfield and beat somebody. But there's no rush to it when you're running it that way. I still think it's going to be a component. You know, and Matt kind of acknowledged this week that they're going to have to clutch and grab and ugly games up and shorten them. And there's nothing wrong with that. You just can't expect 30 points a game when the coach and everybody on the team's happy winning 13-10.
Yeah, well, look, wins are sexy. Doesn't matter how they happen. Darren Gantz.
You know what's sexy? You're sexy.
You know. See, that you beat me to it because I was going to say, speaking of sexy. All right, Darren Gantz, Panthers.com. We will be staying pinned to Panthers.com for your latest injury report, the update, whatever I want to call it.
There you go.
As clumsily as I did.
It.
All right, man.
We got you covered, buddy. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Welcome back to the Adam Gold Show. I'm Adam Gold. Alec Campbell is here, as is Joe Giglio, 99.9 The Fan of Raleigh, WRALSportsFan.com. Wolfpack going to Florida State. No problem, right?
You know, if the schedule had broke a different
just
way,
getting right to it,
I would be with you.
Right.
This feels like a little bit of a trap. Two things, though, I think are helping NC State. Number one, the game plan they just had from Malik Cunningham, I think, will apply to Jordan Travis. So you don't necessarily need to do a whole lot of reconstruction, which, let's be honest,
right,
that's what they had to do after losing Isaiah Moore. There was some reconfiguring that had to be done on defense. Obviously, Drake Thomas sliding over to the mic, basically staying on the field the whole game. Those were all good things. Number two, Florida State, just as I like to call this is a reload the musket game for Florida State. they just poured it out against Clemson.
They
like,
did.
That was their
Gosh.
Super Bowl. Like, that was their, hey, maybe we could still be Florida State. Hey, maybe somebody's paying attention to us. That was their one little moment in the sun.
Well,
Mike Norvell's a moron. So,
yeah, but yeah, what he was doing.
This is
at
a
the
great
end.
Spot for NC State to catch Florida State. I think this ends up being an NC State road win.
I think they'll win the game, but the concern that I have with them is that in spite of the fact that they have a good offensive line, that they have two good running backs, that they have a passing threat.
You're assuming they have a good offensive line.
I don't think it's a great offensive line, but I think it's a good offensive line.
Okay. They have an All-American on their offensive line, which they try to run behind, and everyone knows they try to run behind, and particularly on first down. So when you break tendencies, these are good things.
Right, but this is my point about the way they're doing things, and you follow this a lot closer than I do. They should be a good running team. They're not a good running team. But I think they can be if they flip it. Sometimes you run to set up the pass. To me, they should be passing to set up the run. So And I granted, when you do that, you become predictable too. But I just feel like they should be able to run the ball. And they could not run it against Louisville at all. Last drive, I think they did. But the game was basically over by then. Can they get anything out of that?
The question is, do they have to? To your point, it is tough to throw on every down when everyone in the building knows you're throwing, mm-hmm. right? That's tough to do. Even
they
Tom Brady.
Like 1 yard, 2 yards on first down running the ball.
Even Tom Brady struggles with
right.
that. Right. But I think there is a way for them to pass to set up the run, yes. Or as Dave Doran likes to say, run to win. You run to win. You pass to score, mm-hmm. you run to win. So their formula, going back to Jacoby Brissett, would have been pass early, score early, right. and then be able to grind out the clock with your run game late in the game. They haven't been able to do that recently. Devin Leary, though, has been outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
18 touchdowns, zero interceptions since the Mississippi State loss. 18 and zero.
Yeah.
67% of his passes he is completing. When they get dumb and go away from Emeka Emezi, that's when I worry about some of the things that they do. But no, I thought the play call by Tim Beck on first down on the touchdown to put NC State up 14-10 against Louisville in the fourth quarter was a great example of going against your own tendencies. It was a run fake
right.
after a big play, because on a big plays, they usually like to run up to the line of scrimmage and run the ball. That's what they like to do. So they broke both of their tendencies there. And it ended up being a Trent Penix touchdown, a wide open touchdown.
Right.
Great design play. And really from there, those are the lessons you try to take from it. Like this is week nine, right? Like you're sitting there looking at it going, wow. Hey, we already have a book on you. We know what you want to do. And yeah, lots of teams look at Ike Ekwonu on the left side and say, oh, they're going to run left. Well, just like it's hard to throw right. when everyone in the building knows you're going to throw. It's tough to run, particularly when everyone in the building knows which way you want to run, too.
I go back to the South Florida game, beginning of the season. They couldn't run to the right at all.
Right.
And once they started just running to the left, like, oh, look at that. All these holes are here.
They've had some injuries up front, too. Right. That's why I was just kind of balking a little bit that they have a good offensive line. I think they have injuries up front. I think they've had some problems run blocking, mm-hmm. other than Icky, obviously. But when Devin's dealing the way that he is, I think you just let him go.
Yeah, I think it minimizes their risk when they can run the ball effectively. Yeah. I think they'll beat Florida State. I just hope we get to next week and Wake is still undefeated, and we'll talk about the Demon Deacons here. I think State Wake will just be an absolute. This will be the best game, the most anticipated game ever in the series. I can't even dream of a better game, because State's legitimately good. And Wake will be, hopefully, not that I'm rooting against North
Carolina.
Smells
like a yellow pad. I can't imagine they've met too many times right. as ranked opponents. So,
all right, so let's talk about it. Is it. On the surface, does it not seem like the easiest money ever over 76.5?
The Carolina-Wake game?
Yeah, even though that's an enormous number. I don't – for the team that just hung 70 on Army and –
which is tough to do. It was like in 15 minutes of actual
18
possession.
Minutes.
Yeah.
Took it easy on Duke and scored 45.
Right.
I don't know how Carolina and Wake don't each get at least into the 30s, probably into the 40s.
Bad weather, maybe, I guess. I don't
Are we
going
to have bad weather?
I don't know.
Actually, it might rain this weekend.
If it looks like it does today, then that would be the only thing I would caution. Even then, I would think if both teams would get to the 30s, if not more.
By halftime.
Yeah.
Carolina's allergic to tackling. How are they going to stop? And Wake can do it either way. They can run it. They can throw it. Hartman's awesome. We know Sam Howell's great. I don't know how either team stops each other.
That's a good call. I like it. 76. Seems high. You're right. But for these two teams, it seems low.
I asked Alec if that was the halftime total. The halftime total's 38.
Okay.
That seems low.
Yeah.
We could have that by the end of the first quarter.
Could be.
Carolina could – it could be 21 apiece at the end of the first quarter, and we'd already be – so isn't it amazing that Sam Howell's numbers are essentially the same as they were a year ago? Is that just – that's statisticals? That's just data, but it isn't really indicative of how well Sam's played?
Well, I would assume his running numbers are better than they were a year ago, since he didn't really run
these
last
were just,
year.
These were just passing numbers.
Yeah.
Passing numbers are basically identical to this point.
Yeah, there's probably something to... He didn't have that great of a passing numbers last year because they ran so much. And I think his running is also maybe taking away from some of his passing numbers as well. But some of that could be opponents too, because remember last year they only played
ACC opponents.
This year they're playing some different opponents. So Carolina is easily the most disappointing team.
In the United States of America?
Easily in the ACC and probably in the whole country, unless there might be an LSU fan out there thinking it should have gone one way or another. But I don't have a great explanation for it other than what you talked about on their problems on defense. It does feel like now they've had seven players in the transfer portal as well, including a couple of receivers, who I don't know if they're looking at it like, you know, Josh Downs' uncle is Dre Bly. I mean, Josh Downs is their best player, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Best receiver, don't get me wrong. But you know how team dynamics work.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
Oh, I'm not getting the ball because that's your uncle. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Or Sam doesn't
Mayfield
like, look at Baker Mayfield.
Doesn't want to throw
right?
to me.
Like, you don't know. I mean, you also don't know, like, how much practice Josh Downs and Sam Howell put in together. Like, these are all things, like, I can't explain why they have players leaving their program who should be contributing to their program. But they still have the ability now to ruin both Wake Forest season, and then there's probably not that many Carolina fans who are that care that much about Wake Forest, right?
Actually, I don't think they can ruin Wake Forest season.
I think they can. They can, for sure.
Unless the loss lingers. Unless Carolina beats
them. It's a non-conference game, but if you're Wake Forest, you're sitting here at 9 going, we have a chance. We have a chance. You can hit the bong and think you can get there, and you can convince yourself that you can get there.
You would have to.
Right.
You would have to go to Detroit
where they're
decriminalizing magic mushrooms.
I heard that. Yeah, that was interesting.
So,
yeah, the Detroit Chamber of Commerce thanks you for your promotion of their travel industry.
Just in case anybody wants to take a trip, so to speak.
So here you are, Carolina. Your season's completely lost, but you have two chances now at ruining both Wake's season and NC State's season.
And then ruining the ACC championship game.
Well, they won't get there. Miami would probably end up there under some wonky circumstances.
Well, I'm just saying that you could be opening the door for Clemson.
Oh, well, here's a crazy thought for you to think about, because you know my theory that everyone plays a Super Bowl, and a Super Bowl is not whatever other people try to make it some sort of negative connotation. Super Bowl just means everyone's going to play one game where it all comes together for you.
Right.
You don't win your Super Bowl, but you play a Super Bowl.
Okay.
Clemson's going to play their Super Bowl against Wake Forest. Think about that.
Oh, sure.
Think about that for
a
second. That's
going to be a great football game.
Think about that for a second. Yep. Clemson, who's been in the playoffs six years in a row, has two national titles. When Dabo loves to say, little old Clemson. No, my friend. No. When you want to talk about the smallest school in the Power Five, yes, little, tiny, eensy, beansy, Wake Forest. Yes, all of your words apply for that.
I hope.
And Wake Forest and Clemson is going to pour it out for Wake Forest.
There's no question
they're
going to
pour it out for Wake Forest.
I think it's going to be. I'm not rooting for anything. But I think it will be fascinating if, forget about what happens this week, if Wake beats State the week before Clemson. That's good. I mean, just awesome.
It's unfortunate for Wake Forest that their schedule has gone the way that it has gone, that they're now going to play their three most difficult games in a row.
I think the ACC was smart to backload the best teams' conference schedules. What are you smiling about? That's what every team, that's what every league does.
And the Big Ten does that for sure.
Ohio State's doing that, right? They're all playing these games now.
Big 12 does that as well.
Oklahoma.
Yep.
Baylor. Iowa State, right? I think it was Baylor, Iowa State, and then Oklahoma State to close the season out. This is the way smart leagues do it. We needed to backload Wake Forest.
I'm happy for Dave Clawson. I mean, how you're not?
I am too. Yeah. I also appreciate the fact that when I asked him about the Army game, that he offered, without me asking, that he was kind of disturbed that they gave up 56. Like it was a question that really had to be asked. I'm like, how do you balance that? You scored 70, but you gave up 56 to Army. And so he offered that on his own before I had to ask it. Final thing, Joe Giglio. are we going to go back and think that maybe Miami wasn't quite the disaster that we thought? They're a missed chippy field goal away from beating Virginia. I mean, they win.
That's probably the game that will keep them out of the Coastal title, yes.
That's a win.
Yeah.
Right? What happened at North Carolina that was late, but they still had
rallied.
They had a chance to win the game.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to give them that one. I'll give them the Virginia game. I mean, this is a team that, I mean, once they got the quarterback thing situated, you know, no offense to Derek King, they're a better team with Tyler Van Dyke at quarterback. I wasn't surprised the State lost.
Oh, no, no.
I think State's good and they could have won the game, but man, their offense has suddenly become good with injuries. I'm just wondering if we're going to think back on the season and kind of look at them a little differently.
Potentially. We'll see how they need to pull it into the barn too. Let's not forget here.
Honestly, they should win out.
They should. We could say that often about Miami.
True.
And toes are stubbed and hurdles right. are crashed. So I think it is remarkable what they've done in the last 3 weeks itself. Yeah. I mean, they have not quit on Manny Diaz for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like the players, it's always the fool's mistake to like go ask the players, hey, should we get rid of a guy? Because they're always going to say, I mean, unless it's Bobby Petrino, they're always going to say, yeah, we want to keep him. He's great.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I think this is an outward, obvious vote by the Miami players that they actually care for Manny Diaz.
Oh, there's no question. Does he keep his job?
I think so. Yeah.
I have no problem with Manny Diaz.
Yeah. I mean, now Pitt needs to lose again. And they're the one team I look at their schedule and go, I don't see them losing.
You don't think Duke's going to? I'm just kidding.
But because if Miami can get to 6-2 and Pitt's at 6-2, they'd have a tiebreak, obviously. But I just don't see Pitt losing again.
I think Pitt can be awfully good. I don't know. Well, losing to
on
Miami.
On offense.
Yeah. What happened to their defense?
I tell you what. I talked to Roddy Jones about this week on the OG. Miami drags you down to their level. They're the dirtiest team in the ACC, and I don't appreciate the way that they play football.
Okay.
And they drag you down to their level, and you start making mistakes. You start getting the late hits. You start getting their asinine procedural penalties.
Is the U back?
No, but they get you into this state
right.
where you play at their game instead of vice versa.
It was Florida State that used to play to the echo of the whistle.
Yes, and I would love to see Wake Forest play Miami just for that reason, to see the best coach team, actually how they would handle Miami's shenanigans. But
they are the best coach team, aren't they, Wake Forest?
Yes, by far.
I said this to Dave Clawson, and we'll let you go here. I know what I'm going to get from that team better than I do any other team that isn't like a Georgia or an Alabama. And this year, I'm not 100% sure with Alabama, but I know what I'm going to get with Wake. I mean, they're going to pile yards and points on you. They're going to play smart.
Not going to beat themselves.
No,
that's
are
for sure.
Absolutely not. That's why I like them this week, but it's going to be a high-scoring game. Joe Giglio, thank you very much. Do you want to promote anything for our listeners in Raleigh? What's coming up today?
Oh, we can always promote Roy, that dadgum legend.
Yes.
It's a podcast, 6-part series that I did with Joe Ovius, and very proud of the first episode in particular. Some really good stories from Roy Williams and his mom and his family.
I'm listening to that as we speak because I'm on the radio. But yes, I am listening to that. It's excellent.
I'm on episode 5. It's great.
Yes.
You guys did really good work.
Thank you, Alex. See, the first one was the one that I was most proud of, but there's other ones in there where he just tells so many great stories that you're like,
he's a good storyteller.
When you get to the sixth one, Alec, I said to him, I'm like, hey, you know, you're retired now. If you want to come spend every Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday with us in the studio, you just let me know. I think you can handle this.
For you, he would do it. I think
you can handle this. He's like, all right, well, maybe.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.